Good afternoon. Welcome. I want to thank the LA Times Festival of Books for inviting me to moderate this panel. I expect they'll regret it soon. I've done a number of panels in the past, but they have always been about writing, and the questions are, how do you get an agent, and when are we going to be done with reality TV? I think it's possible that because of the television show that I write, that there are there might be some people who believe that I have an understanding of politics that I promise you I don't. Well, you're going to see for yourselves, I think. But let me introduce our distinguished panelists, who I'm really happy to be here with today. Greg Palast. Said of Greg Palast by Tribune Magazine that he is the greatest investigative reporter of our time and a legend among journalists on four continents. He has single-handedly broken some of the most scandalous stories of the past decade, including how President Bush killed the FBI's investigation of the financing of terrorist organizations by Saudi Arabia, how the Bush family stole the election in Florida, how Enron cheated, lied. How Enron cheated, lied, and swindled its way into an energy monopoly. And later we're going to ask Greg, if you hate America so much, why don't you move back to Iraq? Arianna Huffington's latest book is Pigs at the Trough, How Corporate Greed and Political Corruption Are Undermining America. And Senator John McCain says of the book that it's a rousing call to action against special interests that have all too often triumphed over the national interest. As only she can, Arianna Huffington breathes energy and passion into the reform agenda, a withering, breathtaking, quintessentially controversial book that will inspire, inflame, and educate. And of the same book, Larry David says, I haven't been so entertained and disgusted at the same time since my last fling with autoeroticism.
Can you say what Aaron Sorkin says?
I think that the book was terrific, but Arianna, I have to ask you, if you hate America so much, why don't you move back to Spain or wherever it is you're from?
You asked for it. You walked into that.
Come on, say what.
Aaron Sorkin says Pigs at the Trough is a great read, hilarious and horrifying. Arianna Huffington is a world-class wit who makes a Fortune 500 trip to the woodshed seem like flirting. Christopher Hitchens is the only right-thinking member of this panel. And here's where I want to start. Because your book about Mother Teresa, it's called The Missionary Position, Mother Teresa in Theory and Practice. it took a figure that most people assumed was beyond criticism and wrote what in my industry is called an unfavorable review. This pours into the theme of what I'd like to talk about this afternoon, which is what's happened to dissent today, and why are people being punished for dissenting? You want to talk about that, Christopher?
Sure. I'm willing to go naked on my next album, if that's what you mean. The highest price you can be dissent in Bush is fascist. Okay, well, there are three ways of being a dissenting person. I think one is to take the view, stake out a position against the powers that be, against the ruling class, and to be willing to take on any majority that they might happen to have on their side as well. But the second is more to do with the second half of the first, is whether you're willing or not to confront public opinion. Mm-hmm. And a third synthesis of that point would be, well, would you revisit a reputation that's been blown hugely out of shape by the mass media? And would you stand the accusation that you were only doing this to get publicity yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Because there will
You've
be
never
people.
Been accused of that, have you?
No. not plausibly, as you can see. But thanks for asking. I'll remember it. Now, with Mother Teresa, my motive was the following. I hate and despise all forms of religion, and I think they're a curse and a pestilence. But I don't just hate the Pope or the Archbishop of Canterbury or the Chief Rabbi or the Grand Imam. I despise the people, the simple, humble people who believe in this stuff. Because they're the ones who do the real damage. So, and I'm again, where could you go, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, comrades, friends? To what dinner party could you go, or lunch party, where, if you said I'm against religious fundamentalism, everyone wouldn't just nod and say, I couldn't agree with you more.
Right.
It's probably the safest remark you can make. Mother Teresa, when given the Nobel Prize for Peace, though she'd never done anything for peace, or claimed to do anything for peace, given it anyway, you can't just take the money and the prize, you have to make a speech. She made a speech, she said, the greatest threat to world peace is abortion and contraception. Right? Now, I have a quite squeamish attitude towards the idea of the unborn child, though I'm by no means a Catholic, and I think there could be fewer unborn children and fewer abortions if there was more contraception. These are simple points. Okay, I'll shout then. You want me to be a demagogue, don't you? I can see it coming on. So I thought, now the Vatican does not demand of the faithful that it says that abortion and contraception mm-hmm. are the greatest threats to world peace. That's ludicrous. That's an extremist fundamentalist position. Then people said she was a friend of the poor. I say no, she's a friend of poverty. She was a friend of the rich, certainly, of the Duvalier family in Haiti, who she praised and took money from, who were grinding the poor, of Charles Keating of the Lincoln Savings and Loan in California, who stole the savings of the poor, of Nancy Reagan and Princess Diana. She was always a friend to them. To the poor, she was not a friend, but she was a friend of poverty. She believed poverty was a gift from God and should be accepted happily. And she opposed the only thing that can alter poverty, which is the empowerment of women. The only politically correct remark I'll make today. The empowerment of women is the key to the abolition of poverty. Give women control over their reproduction. That's it. I'm very nearly done. Give women some control over their reproductive cycle, and the worst village in Bangladesh or Bolivia will move up a whole grade right away. If you can throw in a handful of seeds and maybe a bit of agricultural credit from some bank as well, that would be a help. But that's the necessary, not the sufficient. Mother Teresa spent her entire life campaigning against and obstructing the only thing that can abolish poverty. Many, many millions of people are either dead or much worse off because of her efforts. Her life would have been better unlived. Okay? That's what I'm like. Why? I should have asked about Henry Kissinger.
I'm done. You mentioned safe remarks in there, and I wrote down an email that I got yesterday from a friend of mine that I think everyone here would respect. And here's what it says. I know you get excited around Ariana, but don't get Dixie chicked on that panel this weekend. Don't say anything too harsh about the president, Tom Brokaw's special on the White House, or Warner Brothers.
Roden.
I can say
someone we all admire.
We want transparency on this panel.
People like me, and I would imagine everyone on this panel, are getting advice like this every day. It was first given to us, I think, by Ari Fleischer, who said Americans have to be careful what they say. Does America not stop being America once we're careful what we say?
Well, actually, before I answer that, let me just respond to something Christopher said. Because I just finished this morning reading Christopher's book on George Orwell, which mm-hmm. is truly a masterpiece that I highly recommend. And George Orwell is somebody whom obviously Christopher deeply admires, and who, as he admits in the book, was also a deeply flawed man, especially when it comes to his views on homosexuality. Right, Christopher?
Mm-hmm.
So what you are doing to Mother Teresa is something that somebody could do to George Orwell. They could take something with which they disagreed, which was obviously wrong, his views on homosexuality and make that who George Orwell was. So you are taking Mother Teresa's views on abortion and making that who Mother Teresa was, which is clearly not who she was. I mean, I don't want to dwell on Mother Teresa because, frankly, I don't think this is... We are facing much more serious problems in this country and in the world than whether Mother Teresa was good or bad. But I had to answer that.
But I was asked.
Right.
But you were asked.
But I did say.
No, I'm not blaming you.
Essential to her.
I'm not blaming you for responding to Aaron. I'm just blaming you for writing the book. But moving on to your question, I find really more troubling than the fact that Ari Fleischer is advising us not to speak out, the fact that so many of people we admire are following the advice. That's what I find much more troubling. Because let us start with the Democratic leadership. I mean, how much more congenitally spineless can you get? Let's take Tom Daschle. First, he votes for the Iraqi resolution. Then he stays silent for months. And then, just before the Bush administration is about to invade Iraq, he complains. About what? You know, this is like the attempt to triangulate. John Kerry, they say, you can't have it both ways. When it comes to matters of war and peace, especially, and when it comes to the insanity of the preemptive doctrine, how can you not take a stand? And yet the Democratic leadership refused to take a stand, and this is something for which they're going to pay a heavy price. Because right now, as events are unfolding in Iraq, we are seeing the sort of insanity of the idea that we would go there and impose 18th century Jeffersonian democracy on the Shiite clerics who are flagellating themselves on the front pages of the New York Times.
Wait, are you against democracy?
No, I'm actually in favor of practicing a little democracy here at home. And what you said, the comment that you repeated that Ari Fleischer made was made in relation to Bill Maher, as
That's
you
right.
may remember, right? And of course there, you know, Ari Fleischer and Disney won, and Bill Maher show was cancelled, although, you know, he's reincarnated himself in a very nice way at HBO. But the point is that these are powerful forces that are basically defining patriotism in a way which is deeply unpatriotic. And let me just say, I'll just make one more comment, which is patriotism is defined by how many flags do you have on your SUV? Patriotism.
You clap everything, do you?
No, patriotism.
Are you cold? What?
Clap, clap, clap. You know, do not be intimidated by Christopher, okay?
I didn't ask that. That's a lot to ask.
And one more thing.
Christopher?
Christopher?
Easily amused. Hiss them. Hiss.
Rest easy. We're 5 minutes into this thing.
Planting.
No. We're getting close to being on.
One more thing that's actually really important about patriotism is the fact that while we all paid our taxes recently, we have over a million corporations and individuals hiding, sheltering their income and their profits in tax shelters. And some of them, like Halliburton, are getting big government contracts in Iraq. Isn't that deeply unpatriotic? Isn't that how we should be defining patriotism?
Greg, you have been, you work for the BBC. I'm not sure if what I'm about to ask you is on your beat.
Well, I can answer your first question.
Please.
The question was whether when reality TV would end, and the answer is right now. Fox News is the end of reality TV. So go ahead. While I have the opportunity, mm-hmm. I want to deeply apologize to my co-panel members for the things I said about them in my book. I really am ashamed. Go right in.
Okay.
I had no idea.
Ariana mentioned that it's the people who are falling for this odd, very facile, some might say facile, some might say cynical brand of patriotism. My recollection...
Now watch what you say.
My recollection is that, by and large, John McCain lost his bid for the Republican nomination when in Connecticut, then-candidate Bush told the people of Connecticut that McCain was soft on breast cancer, that he was essentially pro-breast cancer. and sure enough, the polls did that. Are the voters of Connecticut too dumb to live?
Right, no, you have to understand, this is one of the reasons why I'm reporting in exile, while I have to swim across the Atlantic to tell the news. And it's very difficult because, you know, the U.S. is the only nation in the world with the First Amendment, with a right to freedom of speech, the right to freedom of press. I'm fighting right now the Official Secrets Act in Britain. I'm campaigning for a First Amendment, and I suggest they can borrow ours because, you know, we don't use it. So, I'm kind of stuck telling these stories. I mean, it's very strange. I really do have, teams of lawyers because they have all this official secrecy. They don't have a right to freedom of the press. But I get to tell the stories there that, you know, are simply like bouncing off the electronic airwaves, you know. It was very funny. I was just, maybe it's not funny. I mean, it's tragic. I reported this story. I got these FBI documents showing that the FBI was not allowed to investigate the U.S. side of the Bin Laden family. You know, like, we're told that there's a black sheep Osama, and there's a white sheep of the rest of the family who support, we know that they're white sheep because they support the Bush family business enterprises, but the FBI wanted to look at two guys who they thought were in America, who they thought were kind of, you know, gray sheep, but they weren't allowed to investigate until the guys had flown the coop, until September 13th, 2001. And I reported that top of the BBC Nightly News all over the planet, and Noam Chomsky said he saw that on the front page of the papers in India, and he said to me, why wasn't that reported in America? This is Chomsky. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes the news is manufactured. I was trying to explain it to him. It's very difficult.
Yes.
There's real limits. You know, I mean, like I did a story that a lot of people who are at least in this room know, but it's kind of prohibited, that George Bush's minions, a woman named Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush. Just a warning. Catherine Harris did call me twisted and maniacal, so I don't want I don't want anyone, you know, taking my word for anything.
It's a good girl,
she didn't say I was wrong. But I said that she knocked off like almost started out maybe 94,000 people off the voter rolls, mostly surprised black people before the last election. And I wasn't allowed. There was no way I could report that in the United States. I mean, it had endless fights. Finally, the Washington Post let me report it like 7 months after it was reported in Britain, you know, which is after the Civil Rights Commission said I was right. So, in other words, they're very good, the Washington Post, at allowing me to come out and shoot the wounded. The actual reporting of the story, I did that from actually George Orwell's old post at The Observer 3 weeks into the election. Al Gore. You know, was still in the race. He was still in the race when I reported how the election was stolen, but I couldn't get it. And one guy who didn't want me to get it into the U.S. press was a guy named Al Gore. You know,
really?
They said when it was reported, said, look, an insider said, this guy, this British reporter said, uncovered how they stole the election in Florida. And he said, and his team said, great. But then they said, well, who's the reporter? They said, Greg Palast. They said, and someone from the inside, whose name you would know well, but I won't mention, said, Greg Palast, we hate that son of a bitch. So that was the end of that.
One of the things that that all three panelists have in common, I think, is that oftentimes their positions are unpredictable, which is to say that they're not locked into a political ideology. In fact, Christopher and Ariana have made... huge sort of a pendulum shifts. And Ariana, we'll get to you in a moment, but Christopher, I don't want to get this wrong. I don't want to mischaracterize this. You left your job at The Nation, at the magazine The Nation, over the magazine's anti-war position. Do you want to talk about that?
Well, not anti-war, because there wasn't going to be a war, but I mean, pro-pacifist position, a neutralist about totalitarian dictatorship and aggression, yeah. Sure. I did. Mind you, before I'd done that, I did manage to write two or three columns about the failure to catch the Bin Laden family on September 13. Mm-hmm. I managed to get them into print, getting somehow under the radar here. And it seems to me that most of you had heard before that Al Gore might have had the election that he lost, taken away from him. You're too easy congratulating yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, on being privy to common knowledge, it seems to me. Something rather smug and self-pitying. By the way, if the Bin Laden family had been rounded up for questioning on September the 13th, everyone would now be saying that Ashcroft was instituting a fascist state, wouldn't they? This is totally unserious and smug and self-pitying talk. And the idea, look, I don't watch the TV, so if Ari Fleischer came in now and gave me a blowjob, I wouldn't know who he was. But anyone who considers that a remark by Ari Fleischer has a chilling effect on what they write or say has no right to call themselves a dissident. If you won't take criticism from the White House press office, you're in the wrong business. And people say that's frightening or threatening. As Anarion Bevan once said, there's no need to muzzle a sheep, is there?
Well,
what have the Dixie Chicks given up? What's Bill Maher given up? Excuse me, this is silly. This is very silly, and it avoids a very important point. What? There is a confrontation not puttable off with dictators who are both genocidal at home and aggressive abroad. Milosevic, Saddam Hussein, Kim Jong-il, others. People think this confrontation can be put off, or that those who want to fight for their values against it should have the courage to say so, but they shouldn't hide behind a kind of inert, affectless, smug pacifism.
Well, I'm not here to have a position.
Hold your applause, by the way. I already said I despise the common people.
So I'm going to ask Ariana to have a position for me.
Can I have a position?
Go ahead.
Because the fact that, Christopher, I can't believe that you're calling everybody who was against the war, in this instance, the nation, or those of us on this panel, a pacifist. I'm not a pacifist. I was absolutely against the war. That doesn't make me a pacifist. And also...
It doesn't make you a pacifist worse than Amos Sainz.
No, just one second. Let me just say...
I won't hit back.
He's a pacifist.
Another distinction I want to make.
Neutralism.
Another distinction I want to make is when you say that we need to take on totalitarian regimes that practice torture and all that, according to the Human Rights Watch, there are 111 countries at the moment that practice torture, that put in jail people without due process, that do a lot of the things that Saddam was doing. So the idea that we are actually going and invade 111 countries, why don't we start with China?
Yes.
I mean, look at what's going on with China.
Why not change the subject?
It's not about changing the subject. It's about some kind of intellectual consistency. Because if the...
That'll get you a clap.
If we're basically going to say that we're only going to practice the preemptive doctrine on countries that we can actually easily defeat, because they are not, after all, the clear and present danger that Saddam was supposed to be, right? I mean, they couldn't even defend their own capital city, and they were going to attack Western civilization as we know it.
Wasn't Stalingrad after all.
Well, of course it wasn't.
It was only from the pacifists that I heard it was going to be Stalingrad.
I never said it was going to be Stalingrad. I mean, I can only defend my own positions, not everybody.
If that.
But the point is,
Just a second, we're getting off one track, though. What you're saying, unless I get this wrong, is that that you're either for the war or you're a pacifist. I didn't buy the idea that either you're for the war or you're for Saddam Hussein. I didn't like Saddam Hussein when he was on the Bush's payroll, and I didn't like him later when he changed. But I have to say, and one thing in Christopher's defense, besides the normal applause, I just came back 2 days. I just flew in here for this from London, where I was called a reactionary and a non-anti-hegemonist, I think is the word. Because I don't believe, for example, that the guys who attacked us on September 11th were taking a message from the wretched of the earth. These were, right-wing billionaire Saudi fascist, Jew-baiting, women-burning fruitcakes, and I wasn't going to see them as, like misguided anti-globalization activists.
Why mention that? Why mention that?
And I was attacked.
You could be talking about that. Why mention that? Why mention that? You could be talking about Robert Mugabe instead, as Ariana recommends. Why don't you?
Let me jump in here. Why
bring up all that stuff about Al Qaeda when there are other bad people in the world?
There are many.
I don't understand you.
But you know, Christopher, you're now perpetuating this confusion that the administration has very successfully perpetrated, which is to equate Saddam Hussein with Al-Qaeda. This administration, and that is really one of the worst things that has happened and one of the greatest dangers to our democracy, is that we went to war in Iraq based on a lie. A lie that... that both Bush and Rumsfeld said in black and white, which is that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein are one and the same. And when they asked Rumsfeld at one of his cute press briefings, why are we going to Iraq now, when he was going on about gassing, you know, the Kurds and various other people, which he had done in 1980, you know, a kind of case of delayed reaction on behalf of the administration. But anyway, he said, we are going to war now because 3,000 people died on September 11th, but they didn't die because of Saddam. And yet, if you take a poll right now, the majority of Americans will tell you that Saddam was behind September
11th.
Yeah. This is very important. This kind of circulation, this kind of stuff has to be stopped. This is absolute glibness.
Yeah, it has to be stopped.
I have not been to one anti-war meeting where there isn't a book on sale. Actually, I'm most very sorry to say it's written by Gore Vidal, but where similar arguments aren't published under less luminous names that don't allege directly that the person behind September 11th is George Bush. Well, now, that's really a scandal. Gentlemen, ladies, brothers and sisters. Well, then don't confuse mine with those. Someone's got to say this, and it'll be me, actually. a glimmer of applause. As was revealed this morning, and there will be more of this found out with every day that passes, because I'm forgiving the inspectors much more time in Iraq myself. Of course, there has been a long connection between Saddam Hussein and Al Qaeda. We don't know exactly
Our president said he had. Now we're looking for the evidence. Why is he talking and not me?
I don't get
because
this.
Because I have evidence, Christopher. You have an opinion.
I don't get this at all.
I'll tell you what.
You have better evidence.
Our president didn't say he was going to. Hang on.
We'll let Christopher finish.
I was answering the question, wasn't I?
I defer.
This morning, in the London press, you'll be able to read it very soon when you snap on your machine. There's evidence of connections that I didn't know about between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda before 2001. There've been what was most impressive to me. How dare you accuse me of having evidence instead of opinions? You should take that back, or I'll make you. No, don't. Don't be like that. Interestingly, most of the evidence of the Saddam Hussein meetings with Al-Qaeda is after 2001. Now, that's interesting, isn't it? Lots of governments were friendly with bin Ladenism, or thought they were, before 2001. Most of them dropped it after. Saddam Hussein makes his contacts with the public afterwards, in Kurdistan, in Baghdad, and elsewhere. That's much more sinister, it seems to me. We've now cleared out the nest of this Ansar al-Islam camp that he helped to run in Kurdistan. We'll find Mr. Zarqawi, I think. It's impossible to believe. I interviewed Abu Nidal, who was once a name as hated and wanted as bin Laden, right in the middle of Baghdad, when he was wanted for blowing up the Roman and Vienna airports, for innumerable assassinations, most of them, by the way, of democratic Palestinians. Wasn't very hard to get the interview. He was in the phone book in Baghdad. He had a villa. He was an arm of the Ba'ath Party at the time. He was a protected element of Iraqi foreign policy. Wait a minute. Why on earth would this be the exception? And in this case, we found, and we will continue to find, the evidence that shows a long friendship, a Hitler-Stalin pact, if you like, between the people who were for the Ba'ath Party and the people who were the ones who worship the one man and the one leader and those who worship the one God. The same Hitler-Stalin pact that ran the peace movement, either ex-communists or Islamic fanatics were running all that. The worst, crummiest political alliance I have ever seen in a lifetime on the American left was following that mob through San Francisco. If they weren't soft on Al-Qaeda, they were soft on Saddam Hussein. The one God leader meets the one God himself. This is disgusting and needs to be denounced.
Greg. Thank you. Greg.
Don't mention it.
Yeah, well,
happy to do it.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, we just got another bait and switch. First, we had in the State of the Union Al Qaeda like organizations that were in Iraq. I don't know. Is that like kosher style? You know, what does Al Qaeda like mean, right? And Abu Nidal is a real son of a bitch, but he certainly isn't Al Qaeda. Don't do the bait and switch number. It's not right. The other thing is that our president didn't say we were looking for evidence of Al Qaeda connections. He said that. In fact, I'll quote you. I have it here, but I remember it. He said we are going in after those who have trained, aided, and harbored Al Qaeda.
Yes,
okay?
That's right.
And without any evidence. But when he first said that, when he said he's going in after those who've aided, trained, and abetted Al Qaeda, I was thinking, shit, he's gonna bust his daddy. You know? you can imagine Easter dinner, spread him, Dad.
Bring it on
for her rights, you know.
Bring it on. You should see yourselves.
But it's true. One thing we did have on BBC, for example, we got a guy out of the Jeddah, a lawyer for the State Department out of the Arabian Embassy in Jeddah, the U.S. Embassy, and he said, okay, that a bunch of guys came to him and said, you know, we're engineers, we need visas to go to America for an engineering conference. He said, fine. This is during the Reagan-Bush administration. He said, fine, where'd you go to engineering school? The guys look at each other and say, we don't remember, okay? Right? And it turns out they're working. He said that he was told he had to give them visas because they're working for our friend Osama bin Laden for counterterrorism training in the U.S. to fight the great Satan. You know, this is before the axis of evil when Saddam was fighting Iran, which is the Unicef.
Before, in other words.
Right?
Before.
Right, just a second.
Are they on his side now?
He was a killer then. Right?
Are they on his side now?
I'm not going to say that. That's silly. And I'm only asking.
Don't you think the change of mind is a good one?
Saddam.
Isn't it funny to see guys argue between them?
And don't put me on Saddam's side. Okay.
I won't put you anywhere you're not going.
Ariana, Christopher said, basically, who cares what Ari Fleischer says, that we needn't feel bad for the Dixie Chicks or Bill Maher. And I don't think anyone does. I don't. I do. It's flushing people off program.
Let everybody.
Sure. There's that, and they're going to have their problems, and everybody is going to have their problems. If I work with Martin Sheen, who, if he didn't have a gig right now, wouldn't be able to get
one.
You're breaking my heart.
I'm not concerned with that. What I am concerned with is the emotion of the people who are getting together and burning Dixie Chicks albums and bonfires and pouring bottles of Beaujolais into the street.
It's a word.
By the way, a tip. If you're going to boycott something, you can't have bought it already. There are French vintners laughing their asses off right now.
The kind of quality of French wine that they're pouring, it's always Nouveau Beaujolais. It's never anything really good.
Yeah. Because of that, and you're right when you say that, if you're going to be cowed by that kind of reaction, that you have no business being a dissident. But the fact of the matter is that the dissidents that we're talking about right now are just a very slim minority of the country. Right? It's a 52-48 thing that we're talking about. Suddenly the 48 are having record albums burned and Disney and ABC are taking them off the air. What's happening?
Okay, well, first of all, let me just tell you the good news, because I think it's very important to recognize that despite all that stuff that we are talking about, the majority of Americans are not being cowed. I mean, the majority of Americans are speaking out. I've just come from a 20 college tour around the country, and there is more outrage and more speaking out in colleges than there ever was during the 90s, when everybody somehow expected to become either a dot-com millionaire or something. Now people are paying attention, and there is no question that there is movement building. It hasn't probably broken through because everybody right now is so obsessed with finding or charging and condemning Scott Peterson, you know, because of the attention deficit disorder.
Yes, yes.
You know, moved from Iraq to Scott Peterson. You know, I actually urge you all to go call Turkey on this story and just absolutely switch channels anytime it appears, because it exemplifies a major problem with our media, you know, the kind of stories they pursue. But the point, the larger point, is that I don't think really we need to worry about the Dixie Chicks, as you said. Incidentally, they're doing very well on the charts right now, have you noticed?
Sure.
Despite the people who are who burned or destroyed their albums. What we need to worry about is our political establishment. That is really what troubles me. Because right now we're being governed by fanatics and fools. The fanatics at the White House and the fools in the Democratic leadership. And here is what... And basically, they had time, certain members of Congress, to hold a press conference in the middle of all the crisis we're facing in this country to announce the renaming of French fries to Freedom Fries. You mean, that shows the level of discourse. And now they're taking the Club of Growth, as they call themselves, a Republican group, is taking ads in Ohio to attack George Voinovich for not supporting a $550 billion tax cut, but only a $300-something billion tax cut. And the worst criticism of him is that he's like the French.
Yeah.
So that's really what... I'm
sorry, what you say strikes me as quite surreal. I mean, it's true that during the First World War, during the anti-German-American campaign, sauerkraut had to be renamed as Liberty Cabbage, and I remember the history of chauvinism and xenophobia myself very well, but I think the reason why things like, they're essentially unimportant, like the Dixie Chicks and the Freedom Fries are mentioned, is because that's the only evidence you have of any lynch mob, atmosphere. I hadn't started yet, Buster. Of any lynch mob or intolerant atmosphere in these United States. It's been extraordinary to me since September 2001, how little of that kind of thing has been, how very little, and how well responded to outbreaks of intolerance or stupidity have been. But we're talking about the Dixie Chicks on the day when, if you care to open a newspaper or turn on your laptop, you can find mass graves being dug up, secret prisons being opened, hidden torture chambers being discovered, vast deposits of cash dollars accumulated by a sanctions regime found terrorist training and sympathy camps and institutions being busted, and soon, I assure you, the discovery of some very unpleasant weaponry as well. And thus, everything that those of us who favoured the regime change policy said, hate to boast of it, don't intend to, everything we said was right.
Except
everything.
For one.
Everything.
And
the rest will be proved, and people are saying, but I worry myself sick about people who are scared of Ari Fleischer. I'm sorry, I find this discussion surreal, and the applause for that kind of thing,
just
absolutely
hang
grotesque.
Hang on one second, because...
Grotesque.
This is fantastic, we're doing great, but we only have 15 minutes left, so we got to move to our lightning round.
15 should do it.
Right now. But the question was about the scent. Maybe we should have had Phil Donahue here as an extra, the missing chair.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Who, by the way, you know...
Oh, yeah, the lonely political prisoner.
Right.
But
well,
listen...
Just a second. It's the reason we haven't had lynch mobs about what people said on television is that they're not allowed on television.
Well, it's exactly right.
When you're only allowed on now, Christopher, for the moment because you're agreeing with
the fact is, I think the reason why we're only talking about the Dixie Chicks and so on is because we're only talking about the people who are talking.
I just got a cheap shot. Wait, I was just personally attacked for something. Mr. Palace suggested I was on TV now because I agree with the administration. Anyone who watches this crap knows I haven't been on for the last 2 months. That's because, in general, when these things happen, it was the same in 2001. But the Rolodex spins to the so-called expert.
Point well, let's say something nice here about Mr. Hitch.
When I was on, though, I was always on with some idiot who believed that Saddam Hussein was harmless.
But one thing I want to be very careful with, because I'm hearing hisses and things coming from the audience, you know, it's not going to help to have a mirror lynch mob. And I think that Christopher's positions are morally felt, and he should be allowed to have those positions. I'm very concerned.
Excuse me, I didn't ask for defense. I didn't ask to be protected from this group.
I don't like the attacks on you.
They're more pussy than Ari Fleischer.
I'm glad you brought that up. Let's just quickly have a cleansing of the palate before we move to the last 15 minutes. I want to ask you this, Greg, because I didn't mention this in the introduction, but Greg Palast was a disco instructor for Arthur Murray at the beginning of his career. All right. And so I want to ask you this. Is reality TV the disco of drama now? Is it just going to... is it going to go away and we're going to look... Now, I want to ask you, the three of you, as well as your compatriots, as well as every politician in the country, as well as most people with an opinion on these things, it seems to me the ultimate goal, in fact, the only goal, is to get you to change your mind. We're trying to persuade you to do something. Now, as I pointed out, Christopher and Ariana are two pretty good examples that could happen. Ariana, you were the pinup girl for the right, and now I don't know what happened. Did you get addicted to drugs or something?
I'm addicted.
No, I'll tell you exactly what happened. Two quick things happened. One is I got to know Newt Gingrich. And the other is I saw firsthand how unserious the right was about all the social problems that they claimed they were going to solve through the private sector. And we see that right now. When, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know why Christopher changed the subject when we were talking about the insanity of the Bush tax cut, but it is really rather important to stay on topic on this issue. Mm-hmm. Because right now in this country, while we are closing schools early in Oregon because we can't afford to pay teachers, while we have 1 million homeless children and while we have 43 million people uninsured, we are not supposed to be discussing, apparently, the fact that this insanity of a tax cut is about to go through, in some modified form perhaps, but still go through. And this is the same, and this is not really irrelevant to a discussion of foreign policy, because it's the same mm-hmm. administration that is lying to the people about why we went to war in Iraq, because despite what Christopher says, originally, remember, we're not supposed to go there just for regime change, but because this was a clear and present danger to this country. It was because of our own security, and that's why we had all these, you know, orange alerts and amber alerts and Chartres alerts mm-hmm. and all that. But clearly, it was not a clear and present danger, and, you know, that is very important. You know, don't buy into this. Whatever they find in Iraq, nobody said that they didn't have chemical and other weapons. So does Pakistan, so does China, so does North Korea, so does a long list of countries. Why don't we invite them all, invade them all, including Luxembourg and Liechtenstein?
Why aren't you clapping?
Okay. Good. Isn't
clap
there...
last time.
Isn't there a very... once again, the idea is to persuade someone to change their mind. Isn't there an incredibly strong disincentive for a politician to change their mind? Aren't I going to run a 15-second spot that says, Arianna Huffington used to say this, but now she says this. Can Arianna really be trusted?
Flip-flop.
Yeah.
But it's to do with the word predictable that you asked me about right. earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very important word, I think. I mean, I hope it could be predicted of me that I would find it impossible to coexist with the fascist genocidal dictator, for example. Mm-hmm. People say, Hitchens says he's against that. He would say that, wouldn't he? He's the kind of thing he would say. Good. I used to be, the other word used to be knee-jerk, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a knee-jerk response. Show him a fascist genocidal dictator. I'm against it. Now, if my knee did not jerk at that point, I would be wondering if I had a failure of reflex.
Yeah.
Which can be a failure of nerve. So I would hope that anyone who knew or cared what I thought would be able to tell what I would think about Al-Qaeda, about Saddam Hussein, about Kim Jong-il, indeed about Robert Mugabe, indeed about the Chinese Communist Party, though I can't do them all at once. No one here is arguing about them. So I think predictability is what people both wish to have and also for their PR image very often to deny that they have, so that they can be interesting, amusing, invited on chat shows and so on. You never know what the guy's going to say next. I don't think that's a very admirable ambition.
Well, the lack of...
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to maybe for the last 5 minutes, I'll open up to questions. But the lack of predictability, I think, Greg, is a good idea. I think by and large, Democrats see Republicans as either Lionel Barrymore in It's a Wonderful Life or Redneck. and Republicans see Democrats as a wildly weak and whiny and not willing to either die or kill for their country. By the way, I don't know if I'm a pacifist or not. I think I'm just chicken.
But the question, the real question here is, why don't you get something that's not predictable on the tube, on the news? And one story I just got to tell you is that I had on my show on BBC television an American television newsman, actually a pretty decent guy, American television newsman, who said, we're sending our kids and our children, our brothers, into Asia, into the Gulf, to die. I know I should be asking tough questions, but I'm not going to ask the tough questions because I would be lynched as unpatriotic. And that was Dan Rather. It was Dan Rather. And when Dan Rather is afraid to ask questions, what about the average schmuck with a microphone in his hand who stands in front of the White House?
Yeah.
They're not going to ask the questions.
And that's the damage that Ari Fleischer is doing.
Is it your impression are you seriously asking us to agree with you that in the run-up to the recent combat with Saddam Hussein, no misgivings about the possible outcome were
there? There was no counter.
Are you asking me to say that wasn't the daily diet that one got? People telling you how everything could go wrong.
There were flags in the corners of the TVs. The flag was being used as a gag. Embedded reporters.
Not only that, but sometimes, you know, when you turned on the television, you went from channel to channel, this had become a kind of an employment program for retired generals. I mean, there were so many generals that became analysts. You thought that they had been taken over.
That's why I just said that neither Greg nor I were on the TV. Look, the TV at any stage to me looks as if it's run when I turn it on, which is incredibly rarely. But when I do, I turn it off again because it's as if you live in a banana republic, one party state. But that's true all the time.
Yeah.
In arguing for regime change, though, on television and radio and in public, I had 6 solid months of being told all the reasons why American troops shouldn't be sent to harm's way, and incredible alarmism to go along with it. Saddam Hussein will hit them with the chemical weapons, by the way, he doesn't have, was one. Sharon will cleanse the West Bank. Turkey will invade Kurdistan. There'll be a million civilian casualties. Every night I did it, you had all this alarmism. And in the press every day, too. If you missed it, it's not my fault.
Let me get back to you, just for the second, the heat of the emotion of this thing. Again, because of, this is before 9/11, and didn't have anything to do with the war, but again, because of the show I write, which is considered by some people to be, it's The West Wing,
okay.
Which is considered by some people to be a liberal polemic. It has no political agenda. We're doing jokes.
Making excuses.
The right terribly unhappy and they said rotten things. Christopher is getting a very unwelcome reaction to his opinions here in the room. Does this, or from most of the people here in the room,
thank you, Mike.
I believe everyone in this room has the greatest respect for Christopher Hitchens. Since they simply disagree with him. But does this
That was tepid. That was tepid.
It wasn't meant to be. Does the trash talking that's going on, which is really what the debate has come down to, is a lot of trash talking. The debate, the right left debate.
Turn on talk radio in America. There's right debate. There's guys who are right wing fruitcakes, and then there's guys who are the right.
You're absolutely right. But I'm talking about,
this is no joke. There is no other voice. Where's this balance?
I know, but I'm talking about the fact that the Rush Limbaughs and his audience only have the most schoolyard things to say about Bill and Hillary Clinton and Al Gore and Tom Daschle and quite frankly the left they may use bigger words to do it, but they think the right are assholes and have no problem saying so. Does this kind of emotion, the Dixie Chicks burning, this kind of thing, send the right further right and the left further right left and just increase the trash talking? In other words, when comes the part when we say, listen, it's impossible that half of us are out of their minds. Somebody must have a point.
Or all of us half out.
I really think that positioning it in terms of right-left misses the point.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the things that are going on are not right-left. Having $70 billion lost to this country in tax shelters is not right-left. It's just moral and correct and ethical and patriotic to outlaw the damn thing. But where is Bill Bennett, right? Where is Bill Bennett talking about this immorality? No, he's only going to talk about sex. Mm-hmm. That's really his. That's the right-wing's idea of morality is sex. Anything else can go, okay? Then, why... The problem, you know, that Christopher and Greg are having a debate about whether we are hearing about these things or not. Yes, occasionally we are hearing about dissent. The point is that we are not staying there. I mean, let me just tell you, just the last week, we had these awful things happening. We had this administration investigating people who may be cheating on their earned income tax credit. While we have all these huge corporate scandals going on, still with most of the guys not having been indicted or having to admit wrongdoing, what are they doing? They're investigating the little people who may be cheating like $50, $100 on the earned income tax. That's their priority. Why? We are, day after day, these stories are reported. I'm not saying they're not reported, but we don't stay on them. We don't express our outrage enough, we in the media, to actually make them matter and make some changes come about, which is really what those of us who keep writing about these things want to see ultimately. We want to see changes. And that's really, I mean, when the spotlight stays on, as in the Henry Kissinger story, that, you know, Christopher has done an incredible job on Henry Kissinger. When the administration appointed him to run the truth-finding commission, it wasn't Tom Daschle who asked the embarrassing questions. It wasn't the Democratic leadership. It was the bloggers on the internet. It was you. It was the alternative media. And finally, when the questions are asked, when the spotlight stays on these issues, they cannot survive. He had to leave. Trent Lott could no longer survive as majority leader. I'm just giving you the good news, guy. There is good news, okay? Right now, the CEO of American Airlines had to step down. Richard Kerr had to step down from the chairmanship of the Defense Board.
Ariana, my darling, look, I don't disagree with any of that. I second it with incredible enthusiasm. It's just that my radar defense goes up when you say, let's do this as a means of discrediting the emancipation of Iraq and the destruction of a deadly threat to civilization. There's nothing you said just now with which I could possibly have disagreed, but I objected only before because it seemed that people were willing to say, how can the president possibly be right on Iraq if he's wrong on anything else? It must be within the mental and moral compass of anyone within this room to say, well, I agree with Bush to this extent. He was right about bin Laden and he was right about Saddam, even if he was late, or even if his father wasn't. No. That's, okay, wait, no, this is what... This is worth my knowing. That thought is not utterable in your mind.
The question is not...
You can't have that thought. No. I don't say the conclusion. I don't say you have to agree that it's so. But the thought that it might be the case...
The question is not...
...is deniable by you. You couldn't think it for a hypothesis.
The question is not right or left opinion. The question... The question is the missing information.
Couldn't even think it.
Okay. The question is the missing information. When you talk about this, we're promised now democracy in Kuwait, which is the military junta run by some used generals so far.
No, it's
and we
not.
Have, what about the, we were going to bring democracy to Kuwait?
Kuwait is not
11 that. Years ago. Remember, women were driving cars. You're going to have a constitutional
still
democracy.
Still
it's 12 years. I'm waiting for the election returns from Kuwait. That we are promised. Were we promised democracy in Kuwait? What about Afghanistan? Where's the democracy in Afghanistan? One warlord, one vote is what we have now, right? That's what we got. That's a democracy.
Rabbit.
Okay,
rabbit.
Listen. Rabbit. We have a. So what are we heading for in Iraq?
Pathetic,
a very passionate citizen here
nonsense.
Who I promised I'd let her ask.
He
a question.
Thinks Afghanistan is no better off than it was 3 years ago.
Can you stand up, say it loud? And
that's what you think, isn't
else?
It?
Hang on one second.
That's what you're saying.
Hang on. Yes, ma'am.
Pointless.
I am saying.
I don't have any objection to what you're saying. Is
I don't care whether you do or not.
I agree with you. But what my question is I want to know why they really went there. They didn't go there to liberate the Iraqis. They didn't go there to bring democracy to those people. They went there to exploit. They are the pigs at the trough. And they've taken the trough from the United States into the Middle East.
Okay.
Where they intended to spread it around.
She deserves a hand for that.
That's a,
it took her to say that.
That's a perfectly reasonable observation, but we're gonna.
Okay.
No, but I would like to respond. respond to that, because it is a very important question. Why did we go there? We obviously did not go there to bring democracy to Iraq. That's just absolute baloney. If Iraq did not have the oil reserves it has, and North Korea did, we would have invaded North Korea. Does anybody doubt that?
Like Serbia and Montenegro and Bosnia, like Afghanistan.
There was a pre-existing agenda about invading Iraq, and then they used September 11th emotion and fears to justify a pre-existing agenda. And they used the fact that George Bush cannot handle complexity to sell it to him.
The question was to me.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll skip the search for the oil wells and well and beds of Bosnia, where not just democracy but national independence and, in fact, human survival was restored, as in Kosovo, where there's also no oil. But I'll ask people to consider, do they think it is responsible to have a homicidal, psychopathic, aggressive dictator occupying the choke point of not Iraq's trade, but of the Gulf, the aperture to the Gulf,
that is the main avenue of the whole world's trade.
Expensive shot, well done. And to dominate 9% of the world's energy resources, I mean, this is, okay, to wait. Say it's fine if that choke point is run by a psychopathic megalomaniac, and say, sure, as long as we don't take an interest in the oil. Irresponsible, puerile view.
I got it. Okay. Let's answer the question why we went there. This is the President of the United States in the high noon speech, 48 hours to get out of Baghdad. And he said, if you remember this now, I want to speak to the Iraqi people. Of course, Jim Cheney forgot to tell them that they speak Arabic. That's okay. Wait, what did he say? We're coming to liberate you from the monster, so don't shoot at our kids.
Arabic and Kurdish, same night.
Come on, Christopher.
Shut up.
I want to read what your president said. The guy you said was a great president. He said, I want to speak to the Iraqi people. He said, quote, do not destroy oil wells. Okay? He didn't say democracy's coming. He said, do not destroy the oil wells.
It's very important that the order to sabotage the oil, which was given to many Iraqi officers, not be obeyed. That they didn't set, as they did with Kuwait, 500 oil wells on fire in retreat, flood the Gulf with burning oil, destroy the ecology of the region, as they had done last time. Very important. Very irresponsible. Not care about it. Very irresponsible.
Much more significant than that was the fact that Dick Cheney was never asked the question, if you really believe that Saddam Hussein was the new Hitler, why did you, as CEO of Halliburton, do business with him? That was after the Gulf War. And also, why did you call for the end of sanctions in Iraq? I mean, do you remember that in 2000, Cheney called for the end of sanctions?
So did Bush.
The point is that how do you trust these guys? If they really thought that Saddam...
Okay, well, General Motors and Ford used to do big business with the Third Reich. Then they switched to making tanks for the U.S. Army to overthrow the Third Reich. I can make this easy for you if you like. The British Royal Navy once sent a fleet to the Caribbean and to West Africa to guarantee the slave trade. And then they sent another fleet later on to abolish and police and put down the slave trade. I think the second policy was better, and the change of mind was worth having, and more so because of the first policy.
Okay.
Now, do I have to draw you a picture?
You don't have to.
Fucking hell.
Condescension in the world.
That'll come in handy.
It takes a lot more to shut me up.
It's patronizing me to tell me about Halliburton as if I've never heard the name.
No.
That's condescension. That's condescension.
You know what?
I've heard of Bechtel too.
Let me just tell you.
Okay.
Ariane.
Let me just say one more thing about all that and why the chickens are going to come home to roost, unfortunately. And I'm saying that really in sorrow, not to pat ourselves on the back, those of us who are against this war. Here we are. Yesterday, I want you to read the front page of the New York Times. when we are being told what is the slate for Iraqi democracy that has been picked by Mr. Paul Wolfowitz. These are the exiled Iraqis that we're going to send to run Iraq, right? The man who's going to run the whole slate is a man who's been working for Pfizer. Clearly, Viagra is going to be one of the things we're going to bring. The other guys were working for Shell, for OPEC. I mean, it is truly a clueless administration. You have no idea how clueless they are when they don't recognize that this is predominantly a Shiite majority and they really want to impose a theocracy. And then we have Don Rumsfeld in his press briefings telling us that will never happen. If we really want democracy and if they vote for a theocracy, then what do we do?
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Go with Pfizer. Go with Pfizer in that case.
I'm going to take this one more question before I thank the panelists and thank everyone else. This has been terrific. Yes.
Sir, Mr. Kitchens, I'd like to ask a question. You conveniently ignore the PNAC agenda, the Project for a New American Century, and the Jensen Group and the Bush regime. We're talking about the Jewish Institute of National Security Affairs. Very honored to mention Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney, Paul Rumsfeld. They're all associated with it. They wanted this war for years. They're associated with North Korea. They were about ready to go launch an attack on North Korea.
All right, okay. All right, you win. Sure. Okay. The gentlemen want to know why Mr. Hitchens conveniently ignored. I'm sorry, the Jewish Institute for National Security.
I know. I often don't remember to stress this enough, but I've been in Washington for 21 years now, and something I keep noticing is the way that WASPs and Christians keep worming their way into the highest positions. When you turn your back, it's happened again. And they promote their friends, their business partners. Right. It's the goyim every time. So I guess I have conveniently ignored the name of Paul Wolfowitz. It's not that it didn't come up. At least he pronounced it correctly. The BBC keeps saying Wolfowitz. I have to correct them every time. Who is this apparently big insider man, Mr. Wolfowitz? Listen, I know how to tell the difference, and I've been reminded of it a lot recently. But that's the least of the tone and temper of the anti-war movement up till now. No, but it's the answer I gave.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank Greg Palast, Christopher Hitchens, and Arianna Huffington, and all of you. Thank you very, very much. Mm-hmm.